What do you guys want to do tonight?
You guys want to watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2?
Oh my God.
Not again.
How about Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
I'm not feeling that.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, feast your eyes on this.
Oh.
Ooh, put that sucker in.
Boys, welcome to the final guys. What's up, freaks, geeks, gals, and ghouls, and welcome to the final guys right here on Corpses for Conversation, where we drink beer and watch nothing but trashy horror movies. I am your host, Toxic J, along with my horror buddies for life, SoCal Leatherface.
You must be completely insane.
And Dimeback the Clown.
Beef stew.
How you doing, fellas?
I'm doing good, man.
Doing great, brother. How you guys doing?
Rough day at work, but you know, same old, same old.
Just been binging on some more trashy movies here.
Yeah, that's what we do best, right?
Right. Those are the best kind.
Okay, so SoCal, what movie do we have for us today?
Today, we have that classic from 1981. No, not that one you're thinking of. It's Night School.
AKA Terrorize. I wouldn't know if we want to call it a classic, though.
I mean, if it happened a while back, I guess that's a classic.
I don't know.
It's a classic, I mean, if you never heard of it.
Like, sure, buddy, sure. Obviously, 1981 was a huge year for slasher films.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, with the wake of Friday the 13th and film companies wanting to jump all over this stuff, they were just pouring it out like crazy. Kind of like now in 2023, the whole comic book movie.
Oh, yeah. Mania,
you They're know, but back now. Then, it's all like Night of the Slashers, especially slashers.
Some of my favorites back from 81 gotta be the Evil Dead for me personally.
Oh, same here. Evil Dead, oh. Friday the 13th.
You guys forgot the best slasher of all of 81, fellas. My Bloody Valentine, come on.
Oh my God, yes.
Come on, man, yeah. At this point, and it was done by Paramount Studios, with the success of actually My Bloody Valentine and then Friday the 13th, you think they would make a sequel to My Bloody Valentine, but no, we got this. Like, we'll get into the nitty-gritty on everything. It's there, I guess, as a horror film. It's not the worst one, but it's not the greatest.
I think, like, I wouldn't even call this a horror film. It's more of a crime drama.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
In the vein of Basic Instinct, Fatal Attraction, horror? I wouldn't go as far as calling it a horror movie.
Yeah, it's definitely a whodunit. Trying to figure out who the killer is the whole time, where you're basically following the detective alongside, or maybe even, you know, more than he does.
Yeah, you know what? You're right, Jeff. Dimeback. Oops, I just let that slip.
It's all good. It's all good.
It's all good.
Everybody, all good. My name is Jeff.
My name's Jeff.
My name's Jeff.
But no, you're right. It's more of a crime drama and it, with a, you know, a splash of slasherness, if you won't even call it that. It could have been a completely different film. They just added that just to pump it out because, you know, at that point, everyone was just flocking to theaters just to see any type of slasher film.
I wonder if this movie was originally even supposed to be a slasher or if it was just supposed to be a detective type film, since the killer that they use in it was kind of a recycled all black leather wearing biker that they actually used back in 1975 in the strip nude for your killer. and also came back in 89 for Nightmare Beach. So it has been done before with this exact type of killer.
I think it was kind of like, you know, like in one of those old wrestling games, you get like a generic wrestler, like when you create a wrestler mode and it's just like, it's there and then you have to alternate. I think that was like, that's what it was. It was just my motorcycle helmet, leather jacket, jeans, boom, you know, no thought into it.
Yeah, it was just so basic.
Yeah. What I did like though was, I don't know what you call that. It's like, it was like a cross between a knife or a machete, but it was like shaped like a boomerang. I thought that was pretty cool though.
Hey, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this right. I believe it's a Kukri knife.
The Kukri.
Hell yes.
The Kukri is a blade issued to Nepalese soldiers known as the Gurkhas. During the Anglo-Nepalese War in the early 19th century, the Kukri became renowned in the Western world for its versatility on the battlefield. The Kukri's unique curved design and angle of the blade gives it the ability to slice and chop simultaneously.
It sounds like a delicacy. Like a dessert.
I mean, I know it was used like for like warriors and stuff, and seeing as how she was all into anthropology and all that and the study of these African tribes, it's the weapons that they use. So it seems fitting once you get into the plot.
All right, guys. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to go by the kill count, gore meter, and the overall rating. So Night School is a 1981 slasher crime drama, in our opinion. It's actually written by Kevin Hughes. From what you had said, Dimebag, before we started recording, you said this was like one of his last films?
Yeah, this was his last film. Best known for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Casino
I
Royale.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, so it's a huge jump for him going from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
What a funny noise it's making.
It's talking to us. All engines talk.
What's it saying?
It's saying chitty 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 bang bang. Chitty 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 bang bang. Chitty chitty bang bang.
Chitty chitty bang bang. Chitty
bang bang. Chitty chitty bang bang. Chitty bang bang. Chitty chitty bang bang.
Chitty bang bang. This movie, you know,
he's like, I gotta get up on this shit. This is where the money's at.
But he did do back in the '60s. He did a lot of exploitation type movies. I can't bring up the titles right now, but it was a ton of exploitation type movies that he came out with before Chitty Chitty Bang Bang even came out. So, I mean, he kind of went back to his roots for this one.
But still, then why would they hire him for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang if he was doing exploitation films?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, so it was distributed once again by Paramount Studios, cash grab for them. And it's funny because do you guys remember when they were trying to like steer away from horror films? But yet they made a lot of horror films. You know, it made them money. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. The cast is unknown. You know, wannabe actors and actresses from, I think, soap operas or TV commercials. So it's no one I know, you know, or anybody else is going to know. They're just body counts at that point.
That's true. But a lot of the actors that we do know today, actually, a lot of them surprisingly started in horror films.
That's
true. Johnny Depp was introduced in a horror film. Jamie Lee Curtis. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis. I'm not sure if Kevin Bacon did Tremors before, like, all the dancing films, but...
No, I think Friday the 13th, and then, yeah, he did, like, what, like, Footloose, and, yeah, you know, Tremors, I think, came out in 1990, 91? Could be wrong, but I don't remember. But we're not talking about that. Although, this is where we can cue a Footloose song by Kenny Loggins.
I'll hit the ceiling, or else I'll tear up this town. Tonight I gotta cut loose, Footloose, kicked off the Sunday shoes. Please, Louise, pull me up from my knees. Jack, get back, come on.
The budget was, what was it? It was like $1.2 million. And then it actually, at the box office, it made $1.6 million. So it was a flop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not like the other ones. I mean, it was released September. This is actual true. Released on September 11th, but 1981. Yeah, many, many years later. So, Cal, what do you got us for the kill count?
This movie seems to be pretty disappointing when it comes to the body count, unfortunately. We only got a kill count in this film of 6 on screen and 1 mentioned that could have happened before the film. You can call it a total of 7 if you want, but I'm just calling it 6 for what I've seen on the screen.
So in total, 6 females, 1 male. Well, what about the kills, though? I know we talked about this off screen. Before we get into that, did you guys hear about this movie prior to us doing the review, or just me trying to ram it down your guys' throat?
I've actually never heard of this movie before. Like I said, I was like, Night School, isn't that the one with Kevin Hart?
Everybody says that.
I thought the same thing. Yeah, I had never seen this film before it was mentioned. I knew it was going to be some type of 80s slasher. The cover of the film seems like, you know, something's going to go on with this woman that's on the cover. Maybe she's the obsession of the killer. I don't know. Had to get into it, but I was ready for the ride.
I found out about this movie back in 2003. No, wait, 2002, I believe. So do you remember when Jason X came out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when the DVD came out, you know, they had this little documentary on it. I think it was 2002. Not 100% sure, but they were like the rise of the slasher. This was before Going to Pieces or any of that. And the Search of Darkness documentaries and stuff. It was about 40 minutes. And I remember Joe Bob Briggs talking about, you know, the slasher craze of the 80s. And there was a one screen that popped up and he goes, I forgot how he had said it. Almost every year there was like a buttload of slashers coming out. So they show all these like slasher titles popping up in the screen. So I literally paused the documentary and I wrote everything down. So some of the stuff that I have never seen before, and Night School is one of them. I don't know if you guys remember, by LACC College, they had a video store called Mondo Video. They sold or rented nothing but trashy films. Like, you can make your own porno with them. They had a great, and it was all VHS. They had a great selection, and I rented Night School from there. And I remember liking it a lot. I don't know if it's because I was just hungry for, like, slashers. And I'm like, I'm going to like it anyways. But then looking back, when like reviewing this film before we recorded, I'm like, it's not the greatest. I mean, the ending was cool. The kills were a little underwhelming, especially a lot of them were done off screen. Well, most of them were off screen.
Of them were done off screen. Or actually, you know what? Take that back. One of them was on screen, and it was the one male.
But yeah, but when he died, it was just kind of funny because how he hit the car and then his body kind of just flipped over.
Yeah, it was just like a rag doll.
Yeah.
When I seen this film, I was thinking if this was going on around the time when directors and whatnot were just learning how to use slow motion, because there was a couple slow-mo scenes that they tried to use for kills that they thought would add to the effect, but just kind of made them look weird. That car crash scene being one of them, just kind of like, if we make him go in slow motion while he's flipping over the cars, you can like really suck it in and feel that, you know? And it just wasn't working for me.
True. Well, let's start from the beginning. So like the opening scene, the first scene in the film was already a death, which was actually kind of cool. Just like they just like, nope, we're just going to bypass it. Let's just kill someone right now. You know? And it was the teacher's aide at the schoolyard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what those are called. Like, I call it a murder go round.
Hop on the murder go round.
Yes, right now, slasher films are very cliche. And, you know, you have Scream explaining all the rules and stuff. But back then, it was totally brand new to people. So they didn't know what to expect. So the fact that, like, she's standing on that little murder go round or tilt a whirl, whatever you want to call it, and just, I did like how the killer introduced himself. Like, he just stopped her dead in her tracks. Didn't say a goddamn thing. I was like, oh, okay, this some shit's about to go down. Mm-hmm. You know, just kept spinning and spinning and spinning. And just the look on her face was hilarious. Like,
it was the acting of these like actresses when they died. It was just so bad. Like, someone's spinning you on a ride and you're just sitting there taking it like, stop. Stop. Who are you?
I've actually fallen off of one of those and it actually hurts. So I can see her staying on there.
Well, that explains a lot then, Dimebag. But I don't remember if the funny part is, I don't know actually the killer. Did he actually swing or they just had the knife in hand and then just did some blood marks on the screen? I don't remember.
But he was just holding the knife up and he was just spinning and spinning spinning. And then I guess he put it closer to her neck and just like he got her a couple times. Like when she came around, and then the last time was the beheading.
I like how it looked like he was messing with her. Like he was spinning it around. It looked like it's going to cut her, and then he'll lift it and then put it right back down. So it's going to cut her and then lift it. It's like playing with your food.
So after the first victim was, well, technically second, was killed, then we get the detective character. What's the name, SoCal? I don't remember.
The second kill was Kim. Actually,
no,
Kim
Morrison. The detective.
The detective was Judd Austin.
Yeah, that is such a redneck name, man. Detective Judd.
I'll tell you what.
You know
what bugged me the most about this guy Judd was that everywhere he go, not only did he just like break and enter into houses, not only did he just like walk into establishments and say, "I'm a detective," but this guy never once in the whole film, and I waited for it, showed a badge. Usually in movies, you're used to them busting out the badge, putting it in their face. I'm Detective So-and-so. He never busts out a badge. And only once does he reference, "Do you want me to take out my badge?" And I'm sitting there like, "Yes, take it out."
And he never took it out.
Like, excuse me while I whip this out.
They didn't have the budget.
They're going to believe what I say anyways, you know?
They didn't have the budget for a little prop badge. And they could have just gave him he could have just busted out his wallet, but nope.
So obviously this is a cat and mouse game of, like we said earlier, whodunit. Detective Judd, you know, is trying to track down the killer because actually this is the second killing in the last few days. The first one was before the movie even started. There's like a rhythm going to this where the killer decapitates the heads and dumps them in a dumpster. Which brings me to our second kill, which is I put death in aquarium or death by aquarium, if you get, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, that was Kim. Kim in the aquarium. She just got done feeding some. It looked like she was feeding turtles, but she was feeding them squids for some reason. I didn't even know that turtles ate squids. Right. I thought turtles were vegetarians, but that's just me. I don't know anything. So yeah, she's just like, you know, just got done feeding them, about to go to the locker room. You just like hear the killer walk in, and then he just surprises her right in the locker room and just starts slashing away. And Dimebag actually gave the best impression of how she sounded when she was getting slashed. Dime, how did she sound when he was slashing her?
Well, you know what? I'll give her the best acting award of 1981 because it was like, "Oh, no! Oh my God! Ouch!" It's like, really? Like, you're going to be screaming. If you're getting stabbed, you're going to be screaming bloody murder.
And that's the funny part because I watched that whole scene played out. Keeping in mind, I guess every time the killer strikes, it makes this, I don't know, wonking sound. I don't know if the microphone will pick that up. But, like, you know, like, that killer is coming. Yeah, you're right. She deserves an award because, like, she overacted on it. The killer's hand was only going at a basic motion, and she act like she was constantly getting slashed, and, like, she's rolling around on the ground.
She throws the fish net on him and he just tosses it back on her.
I was like, are you serious? She act like that was the world's biggest or heaviest fish net and she could not get out of it.
And another thing too is the sound editing on this movie. Every time somebody talked, it was like two seconds delay on their speech, you know. So whatever you heard, it was like, really, it just didn't match up. And that was driving me crazy the whole movie. I got a headache just watching their mouth move.
It did look like some parts of this movie were overdubbed.
I don't know if it would. I'm assuming it was filmed here, not out of state or like in a foreign country.
No, it was definitely American. It was filmed in Boston, right? Or
the acting on this, like with the girl when she's dying, it reminds me of Billy Madison. Remember Billy Madison when he's having one of his celebration parties and then like his buddies are just squirting that kid with the hose?
Oh yes.
They're just squirting that kid with the hose. He's like, "Who are you guys? I don't even know you, mister. Leave me alone."
Stop it. Who are you? Right. Like that's how that kill like. Sounded.
Right.
All right, guys. So what about on kill count? So kill 3, which was the waitress.
That was one of my favorite kills. I want to say that was my favorite kill. I mean, I had 2 favorite kills. That was one of them.
You just like the beef stew line.
Oh, God, the beef stew. Oh, my God. That stew looks so great. I was like, man, it made me hungry.
I don't know. Now, every time I look at beef stew, I'm just going to think, Dimebag stew.
Yeah, you could tell people were going to die in this film. Like, they would jump scenes from first you're at the aquarium, now you're at a diner, now you're at a school, and they're just jumping. And as soon as you see one person alone, you're just like, all right, that person's going to die next. I just know it. And that's as soon as I seen her, when she lets her coworker go home, she's like, oh, I'll lock up. I'm like, she's dead.
And for the majority of this film, it all happened like one after another. There was no like real character development. You saw just things just kind of happen. I don't know if, like I said, if this was just a cash grab or just they actually put time into it, because I feel sorry for anyone associated with this film that they actually did put time, because it didn't show up on screen.
Yeah, the film only was 1 hour and 28 minutes long. And I thought, oh, that's a basic time for a film. You know, it's a pretty standard runtime. I thought this movie was going to zoom right by, but it actually felt very drawn out in a negative way. Like everything was just kind of lagging for me. So I felt like the movie was like over 2 hours, but really it was only 1.
So what I do is whenever we're reviewing, I just put in the background, and right now I'm at kill 3. I know this, I don't know if this makes any sense, but it has a lot of cock teases. And when I say that is, oh, you think that they're going to find the head there. Oh no, it's there. You know, it just kind of, it takes too long getting into where the decapitated head is.
Yeah, when they found the hair in their soup, and it was like, oh, okay, the head's going to be in the soup. No, it wasn't even in the soup. It was in the water pot, I think, in the sink. It was in the sink, yeah.
And the thing is, they dragged that beef stew scene for a while for you actually see it pouring from beginning to end. I'm like, you didn't need to do that.
And then after all of that suspense, if you can call it that, was over, you don't even see the head. You just see water going down in a sink. You start to see hair, the slightest little bit of skin, and then you're just to assume, oh, it's a head because of the guy's face.
It was in their budget. So they wrapped it around like some like cantaloupe or something and just put a wig.
I did like that they find the body in the dumpster. That was pretty hardcore. Just dumping in the dumpster.
Speaking of the devil, because that's the scene I'm at exactly right now. When you find the body in the dumpster, to me, it just looked like a mannequin. I don't want to say very like convincing, but it is a horror film for crying out loud.
Yeah, I felt that the movie was like low budget, and I was thinking that there really is just a woman laying there in the dumpster having to smell that while they film. And they're like, we're going to take it again from the top, and she just has to smell all what's in there.
Yeah, who knows what was in there. Kill number 4 and 5, the lady couples, the lesbians.
See that? Okay, right there. That's the thing that got me is that. So Kathy is the woman that was having an affair with her instructor. So she goes to the dean and she feels very violated, very used. She has a scene where she's like confiding in her the truth, and the dean just tells her, "Well, why don't you come over to my house later and we'll talk about it." When you see her there, she is trying to seduce a very vulnerable Catherine, which is just, it's just messed up.
Before we get into that, those double kills, you know, story's pretty simple. Cop trying to find an answer for all these like random killings. In the end, they all kind of make sense. And the reason's kind of stupid, I guess you could say. So victim number 4, I don't even know her name. I mean, it wasn't on screen that long for me to care. You know, it was killed off screen. And just yet again, the acting, the killer was behind the door. No, no, oh no, you know, just like overacting.
Don't you stab me with that knife.
And then you see the hand stick out with the killer, and then all of a sudden you hear the door go, making all these banging noises, and all of a sudden she's dead.
Did they even do like the blood coming out from below the door that they do in films? You just don't see it, it's off screen, then all of a sudden blood pours, but I bet they didn't.
I don't remember. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't.
Well, the knife for the door was pretty awesome. That was definitely my favorite kill, because you don't see it, but you hear the struggle behind the door and just that knife going right through the door. That was amazing. I love that scene.
I know. It was such a thick door that it cleaned off all the blood when it went through, too.
Yeah.
So what does the killer do? Goes after her lover in the bed. Like, he wants some of that.
But first he puts the head in the toilet.
Yeah. And the whole thing, how, like I said, how that scene, you did not hear your lover getting killed in the next room. You were completely oblivious to all this stuff. I don't know. Maybe she's taking a dump. I don't know.
Yeah, she waited for her so long she took a nap.
Yeah, I don't even remember how she died. Didn't you, like, just cut her up in the room?
It didn't show it. Off cam. This movie's famous for off cam kills.
Yeah, it was completely off cam.
Yeah, let's just say, like, he beat her to death with an iron or something. I don't know.
You catch on to the trend of this film when it comes to this killer real soon into the film when they're talking about putting the head someplace. So when I'm watching it, I'm just like, where are they going to put the head? I bet the head's going to be there. And I'm guessing where the head's going to be found.
I don't even remember where the head was found. Like I said, going back and looking at this, I'm like, oh, this wasn't the greatest. You know, I mean, they tried. So along the way, Detective Judd goes to the women's college because that's where one of the victims went to school at. Met the professor. Find out the professor was a sleazebag and sleeping with all these co-eds and flirting with them. I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, dude, this is an ugly motherfucker here. Like, why would you? I mean, I guess he was good at sleep talking to me, because I was like, really? I'm like, him? I mean, dude, he had like a bowl haircut.
Yeah, the dude looked like Chelsea Grammer to me. He looked like he could be a Chelsea Grammer Kmart version.
And then we meet his foreign exchange student. What's her name?
Eleanor.
Okay, Eleanor. Yeah, like, it kind of plays up and sets up like she's the final girl. But then again, at the same time, it doesn't. It kind of falls flat. And I think at this point in the movie, you already kind of figured out, or at least you think you figured out who the killer was.
Yeah, I found out like halfway through the movie. Not even halfway through the movie. I was like, oh, it's got to be Eleanor.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't think that. I didn't think that. Like, turns out, you know, Eleanor was the killer the whole time. And the girl that was set up to be the final girl ended up being the killer. Which, okay, I'll give him credit. That was different. At least at the time. I liked it. I'm like, okay, that's a little twist.
Yeah, but it seemed like every time the professor would flirt with anybody, that's who would die. That's what gave it away.
So you telling me if he flirted with some old 89-year-old woman, I'm going to kill this bitch, you know?
Probably not. It was the 80s.
Yeah, definitely. You could tell with this chick. Every single person he talked to showed the slightest bit interest. They're on the hit list.
Yeah, I've dated a couple girls like that. So, I mean, there's some psycho chicks out there that probably do that.
You dated an 89-year-old woman?
No! Jesus Christ. Dog. Oh, man. I mean, shit, I'm 50 now. So, I mean, it wouldn't be much more of a jump.
80-year-old women listening out there, Dimebag is available.
Hell yeah. Take out your dentures.
You know, and I actually like the tagline for the movie. Simple but kind of creative. A is for apple. B is for bed. C is for co-ed. D is for dead. F is, what is it? Failing to keep your head.
That was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was actually pretty cool. I think they spent more time on the tagline than they did the movie.
I had to read that through like 3 or 4 times before I realized that it rhymed. I was just reading each one individually.
This is the first time of me reading it out loud and rhyming. I like how I did it was like, A is for apple. Like I said it all like robotically.
You just Dr. Seuss that right now, man.
Yeah, so
you're gonna read that to your daughter when you put her to bed now, huh?
One fish, blue fish, D is for dead.
All right, guys, gore meter. What do we have for us, Dimebag?
I give it a 1. I mean, you don't like I said, you see the kills off screen, you never see any gore. I mean, there's a couple times where you see the little membrane hanging down when she is holding the head. And, you know, a little blood drip right there, but you don't see nothing as far as gore in this movie. So I'd definitely give it a 1, even half.
And you're just being nice, right?
I'm being nice. I'll just give it a 1.
What about you, SoCal?
I'm going to have to piggyback on what Dimebag said. I gave this movie a 1 when it came to the gore. Originally, I was thinking about giving it a 0, but I'm like, well, I mean, there is blood. It's here and there. It's when he's doing a couple of his slashes. You see it on their bodies pretty much, but this movie is definitely nothing near any gory of a film. So this movie just got a straight up 1 for me.
I'll probably be nice and I'll just give it a 2. Only because, like I said, it has some like weird special demented place in my heart, because when I was really getting into super slasher films, like I gravitated towards this, and I have it. I own it on physical media, so I'll give it a 2. But is it my favorite? Not by a long shot.
So your gore level is a 2?
Probably, yeah. I'll give it a 2. Like I said, I'm just being nice about it. I mean, to me, I think the most or the goriest scene in the movie, and if you want to call it that, was the victim in the aquarium. Mm-hmm. You know, you just see hack and slash and she's like covered in blood. I was like, you only hit her like once or twice. But yet she looked like she was all drowned, like, you know, something out of Terrifier.
I like when the head sinks to the bottom and then like a turtle's like trying to grab a buddy,
yeah, just,
you know?
Right? Yeah, just trying to poke at it. Are you okay? You know?
He's like, ooh, lunch.
So overall, what's the rating for you? I'm going to start with you, Dimebag.
I will give it a 2.5 overall rating. One reason is you said it was named something else, right?
Yeah, it was like Terrorize.
Terrorize, because
that's a stupid name.
Yeah, but Night School, really? I was like, most of it doesn't even take place in a school. And, you know, everywhere else but a school. I mean, you hear Night School, you think, you know, Koa is running down the hallway being murdered, you know, and
laughing. Like,
yeah, you know, it's like, really? It's like
keg party.
The title doesn't fit. Would I watch it again? Probably not. Like you said, it's not the greatest horror movie. You
know? Part of our history growing up, man.
Yeah. I was 8 years old when that movie came out.
And that's after you fell off the murder ground, right?
So probably around the same time.
What about you, Leatherface?
My overall with this film, it just wasn't memorable to me. It's like, there's movies that come out in the 80s and something has to have a killer, a character, something that's very memorable. And this movie just didn't really have any of those to me. It did have a cast, but I felt like it just had this generic cast of unlikable people. If I can name a few, we got the touchy teacher, the stalking peeping bus boy. We got the nosy flirty waitress. You got the unhelpful comedic relief partner. You got a horny dean, the overly attached girlfriend, and of course, the Harvard cop. He has to be the smartest one on the force because he's the only one that went to Harvard. And back then it meant something, I guess.
Yeah, I guess he kept saying it more than once in that film.
I would know. I went to Harvard. Take my word for it, guys. And in the end, he wasn't wrong. Rachel Ward did do a good job. I felt, though, if there had to be one positive in this, I felt that her acting was good. This was her first film. She was actually nominated for a Golden Globe that same year for Sharky's Machine.
Lion Pictures presents Burt Reynolds in Sharky's Machine.
If you don't get out now, I'm going to have to call the police.
I am the police. Sharky Weiss.
They were just street cops until they teamed up with Sharky and became Sharky's Machine. Nobody leans on Sharky's Machine.
And
I'm sorry. I can't get past that name.
Sharky's Machine, man.
Yeah.
Nominated.
I've heard worse, but still.
Nominated for the New Star of the Year. So, I mean, she's been doing something right. And then she was also nominated for a Golden Globe for the miniseries or television movie Best Actress for The Thorn Birds in 1983. So that has to be like the one thing good about this film. But honestly, I just have to recap and just say it just wasn't a good movie. There were some scenes in this film that just didn't make any sense to me. Like I had to note here, not only does Eleanor own the loudest shower in her city, when she's taking a shower, that thing's just spurting down. I never knew the purpose of the term hard water until I saw that scene.
Actually, going back to that scene, him, her, and the dean hook up and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck were they doing?
That's my next point. I was about to say, I noted it right here. I call it the Clamato shower seduction. It looks like that dude got out some tomato paste and he was rubbing it down her back and she was loving it. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that. We should make a shirt out of that.
CFC podcast, the Clamato showers.
The Clamato shower seduction. But overall, my rating, okay, back to my rating. I just have to give this movie, it's a 1 out of 5 for me. It just missed a lot of marks. Nothing was too memorable except the things that I don't want to remember, like the Clamato. So I'm giving this a 1, personally.
I'm going to have to give it overall in general, probably a 2. Now, is it a stable in slasher history? No. It just jumped on the coattails of everything that came before it, just to make a buck or two. I don't want to say the killer was unique because it wasn't. I mean, it was pretty generic, but I thought it was entertaining at the same time.
Well, like I said, the killer was just recycled from another movie back in 75. The exact same look.
And the thing is, when you go to horror conventions, like I know you guys do a lot, now, let's face it, no one's going to cosplay as this. If you randomly see someone dress up like this, you're going to be like, oh, it's only catered to the hardcore fans, and which I like to think all of us are. So when we see someone dress up like this, we're going to go, oh, snap. Okay, you know?
I would think The Wraith. You remember the movie The Wraith?
An evil force took his life. An unearthly power has brought him back. He is a phantom, a wraith, a cosmic spirit given another chance.
Are you new in town?
Yeah. Wasn't it the same?
Oh, yes, with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
That's a good movie, too. Yeah.
The black helmet, the black suit.
Okay, I could totally get the long story short. I'm going to start with you, Dimebag. Is this trash or ass? Trash being good, ass being ass.
I give it ass.
What about you, SoCal?
This movie's definitely some ass. I'm sorry.
I'm going to be kind of in the middle, maybe. Trash ass.
Trashy ass.
Yeah, trashy ass. I just think it's... I'm just collected because of part of the history. Because 1981 was my favorite year in like the slasher genre. And for all our final guys and corpses for conversation peoples out there, we will probably do a future episode based on 1981. I mean, there was so many good movies out there. You know, you had Halloween Part 2, Friday the 13th Part 2, The Burning, Madman, My Bloody Valentine, you know?
We had Halloween. Halloween Part 2 came out that year and Friday the 13th Part 2.
Wow, is there an echo? I literally just said that. But we'll get to that later down the line.
I mean, I did pretty much say all the things that are in my notes. I mean... The music for this film was actually done by Brad Fidel, who did the music for Terminator, T2, and Fright Night. And I mean, I don't know how he went from, you know, the famous do-do-do-do-do. To this weird warped wah-wah-wah-wah-wah that this film got. I don't know how he did it.
He's super downgraded, bro. So right before we wrap this up, I'm going to ask you a quick question, really quick. Would you buy this for $5 or no?
No.
No, I'd rather get a pizza.
Or a beer.
Little Caesars.
Pizza, pizza.
All right, CFC Junkies, that concludes another episode of The Final Guys. Follow us on any social media accounts that we have. I only run the Instagram account. Zom probably, I think we have a TikTok, Facebook, Dimebag, links to your social media accounts.
Yeah, you can find me on Dimebag the Clown as Dimebag with a Y underscore DA underscore clown with a K. You can find anything CFC podcast on there as well. Pretty much promoting the hell out of this podcast because I love this place.
You could find me at SoCal Leatherface on Instagram, all one word, no underscores at all. Just SoCal Leatherface. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe. Give us 5 stars on whichever podcast platform you prefer. Every one of your reviews gives us another chance to reach new faces, reach new ears, and just get ourselves out there. We appreciate it.
And if not, I'll be hiding in your closet.
CFC Junkies, don't forget to press eject.
Be kind, rewind.
dump you.